Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to learn about the Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group and get an update on the state's veteran cemeteries. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon Networks are an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program are vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements as we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. Your help ensures our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you are ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit mnbtyr.ng.mil. That's mnbtyr.ng.mil.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio today is Doug Wortham. He's a retired state command sergeant major from the Minnesota National Guard, and he's been a host in training for Minnesota Military Radio. But, Doug, we were interrupted with that with something called the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. It's so great to be back with you here on Minnesota Military Radio, and great to see you in person again. And I'm looking forward to what lies ahead here for the program.
And, Doug, we've got a great topic today because we're going to be joined by the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group, and their mission is to deploy to provide life support and command and control of base operations. The unit's responsibilities include leading the reception, staging, onward movement, and integration of supporting forces, managing facilities, and providing administrative, medical, and logistical support for troop services on a base camp. And the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group is Colonel Stephen Burgraff. Colonel, I wonder if you could share with us, how long have you been in the military?
I've been in for 29 years.
And has all that time been with the Minnesota National Guard, sir?
I started off as an enlisted MP in 1991, working out at once I completed my basic training in AIT, I started working security at Camp Ripley. And while I was working security there, I went to college, Brainerd Community College during the day, and then shifted over to St. Cloud State University, where I joined the ROTC program, and I worked out at camp at night while I went to college during the day. And in 1996, I received my commission, and then I went on active duty for 3 years, and I was hired back in 1999 by the Minnesota National Guard, and I've been in service with the Minnesota National Guard ever since.
Colonel, that sounds like quite a journey. At what point did you express or find out that you were interested in logistics?
Well, my father was in logistics. He retired as a Chief Warrant Officer 5. And we have a tradition of military service in my family, Tom. My grandfather served in World War II in the Navy. And then my father joined the Minnesota National Guard and served 41 years. And my oldest son, Brig, is in the Minnesota National Guard. He currently serves with the ECAB. And then my middle son, Brendan, just joined. And he's going to basic combat training this summer. And then I have one more son, Brock, who's in the 8th grade. And, you know, we'll see what happens when he turns 17 or 18, if he joins the service or not.
And, sir, I understand that you served with Doug Wortham when he was a command sergeant major.
And not only did I serve with Doug, I got the opportunity to deploy with Doug when he was a battalion command sergeant major. And we had an interesting year-long deployment in Basra, Iraq, together with the 34th Infantry Division.
Yeah, we definitely did, being a part of that command team for the 34th DHHB Division Headquarters and Headquarters Battalion. But it was a great experience, and I'm glad that I was able to share it with you.
Colonel, we need to get to work here and talk a little bit about the 347th Regional Support Group. Can you tell us how that fits into the overall structure of the Minnesota National Guard?
Sure, Tom. So the 347th Regional Support Group is unofficially considered the sustainment support brigade for the Minnesota National Guard, and that's really based on our capabilities. With the inclusion of the 1347th Combat Sustainment Support Battalion that will be activated in September of 2021 underneath my command, we'll have 14 companies, detachments, and teams that provide a wide variety of logistics capabilities from maintenance, transportation, medical, human resources, contracting, field feeding, and finance. You've already talked about our wartime mission, but when we're not deployed, we provide command and control over our assigned forces to make sure that they're trained, ready, and capable of mobilizing to conduct their wartime mission. So really, as you can see, the value of the 347th RSG lies in the logistical support behind the scenes to the warfighters here in the Minnesota National Guard.
Colonel, I'm trying to figure out just how this fits in. Our listeners last fall heard the story of our 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team that went out to NTC at Fort Irwin, California. And I understand that you had 500 soldiers from the 344th or 347th Regional Support Group that went along with the 1st Brigade Combat Team. How does that all fit together, sir?
Sure. So, yeah, back in July 2020, the 347th RSG had 500 soldiers that went along with the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team to the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California. And we basically performed our wartime mission, which is kind of command and control of sustainment activities and base support. So what we did is we conducted RSOI, reception, staging, onward movement, and integration for those soldiers as they arrived from Minnesota to the National Training Center. And then once we got them integrated into the National Training Center, then we assisted them with COVID-19 screening, mitigation, isolation, quarantine plans. And then we also assisted with life support activities and contracting for the entire operation for the 5,000-plus soldiers that were part of the Armored Brigade Combat Team and went through that National Training Center mission. And it was very significant because when COVID-19 hit, that shut down all the rotations at the National Training Center, and the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team was the first rotation to start back up after many months of no units going through and training at the National Training Center. And COVID-19 was a big concern at that time, and we put together a very solid plan to make sure that we met all the CDC guidance and we could still accomplish our mission and train the soldiers.
And, sir, Colonel Kemp told us that was just one more enemy they had to fight in order to accomplish their mission out in the high desert out in California. And sounds like your 500 soldiers were pretty integral to managing that situation.
It was. Colonel Kemp is right. It was definitely a challenge, but, we took that challenge head on as a Minnesota National Guard entity, and we overcame it. So it was very instrumental, and we had a lot of people from the Army come to us afterwards to take our TTPs and our standard operating procedures so that they could follow what the Minnesota National Guard did as they followed us in rotations after ours.
You know, and Tom and Colonel, I don't think we can underestimate or even talk enough about how critical your role truly was to ensure that brigade had a very successful rotation. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, I like to consider the regional support group as a force multiplier. And so, you know, what we can do to make sustainment operations easier for the warfighters, you know, that's what I really take pride in doing, and that's what my brigade takes pride in doing.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Colonel Stephen Burgraff, who is the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today we've been talking about the 347th Regional Support Group, and I've been joined at the studio here by retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, who is a host in training, who happened to spend some time with the commander of Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group, Colonel Stephen Burgraf, and he also serves as the Deputy Chief of Staff in charge of logistics for the Minnesota National Guard. And Colonel, I wanted to talk to you. We've been fighting a pandemic for a year. The Minnesota National Guard was called up early to move some supplies around, and then they provided some folks to go to some nursing homes and help there. And now they've got some guardsmen and women out giving shots. It's called State Active Duty, and I'm assuming the 347th Regional Support Group is probably right in the middle of all that activity.
Yes, Tom, we are right in the middle of that activity. We've supported the COVID-19 pandemic by assisting the state of Minnesota in the establishment and the management of a PPE warehouse, personal protective equipment, by our Lotus Stitions here in Minnesota. That was one of the first missions that we received during the COVID-19 pandemic. We also worked at the community-based testing sites with our medical personnel from the 204th Medical Company. And we've also provided soldiers at the long-term care facilities. And I'm proud to say that the PPE warehouse and the community-based testing site lead project officers have come from the 347th RSG. The entire RSG has done a wonderful job supporting the state of Minnesota through all this. And I'm most proud of our 434 Support Maintenance Company, who sprang into action early on a Saturday morning when I received the phone call that we had to go into some long-term care facilities and provide them with assistance. And within a few hours, they were able to execute their calling tree, and they had their soldiers assembled, and they were ready for duty. And what really makes this mission so unique, Tom, is that these soldiers were mechanics. They weren't medical personnel. And we sent them up to Camp Ripley, and we gave them training, and they went into these long-term care facilities to care for our elderly Minnesotans and did a wonderful job, a top-shelf job. I was just blown away when these mechanics, I went and did a site visit and asked them how things were going, and they were so proud that they got to go into these long-term care facilities, these elderly people's homes, and take care of them. And it was a life-changing event for a lot of these soldiers in a very positive way, and I'm really proud of them. And I really feel like they went above and beyond, you know, the call of duty. If you ask me, when you sign up to be a mechanic, you're never going to expect to have to go into a long-term care facility and perform the type of missions that they did when they were in those facilities.
Doug, is a former State Command Sergeant Major, how important is it for your troops if they get a chance to call up on state active duty and help their friends and neighbors? That's pretty great duty, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, the motto, of course, that the Minnesota Guard goes by is we live here, we work here. Or we work here, we serve here, we live here, right? And that is such an important phrase to live by. And one of the things that Colonel Burgraf is talking about here, demonstrating just that versatility that the soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota Guard have, and to hear that morale booster, really, I think, is what you're describing there, sir, aren't you? Is just, they're so proud of it.
Oh, they were very proud, and it was a huge morale booster. You know, as the commander, I was really unsure when we tapped into our mechanics to go provide, health care to the elderly and how they would receive that. But they received it well, and they, you know, so well that they exceeded the morale that I was expecting to come out of that.
Colonel, I just want to follow up. We've been called up to state active duty a lot in the last year, and some of it's been because of some civil problems, and I know that a lot of the troops are just standing down from Operation Safety Net. Part of the logistics of that, I think, is when they stand down and they go back home, you've got to make sure that all that equipment and everything that they've used is ready for the next mission.
That is correct. We're actually conducting recovery operations right now from Operation Safety Net. But the RSG back in May, June 2020, during the first civil unrest, we were the organization that was responsible when the governor mobilized the entire National Guard to put all 10,000-plus soldiers and airmen through reception, staging, onward movement, and integration. And that was a huge undertaking. And we had to validate their administrative information, their medical information, their pay information. And then we had to make sure that they understand the rules of force and how they were going to engage in the public. And we also supported the Department of Military Affairs with contracting and finance support. And then we provided command and control at a logistical support area that was supporting the entire operation. And then just recently, Tom, as you discussed Operation Safety Net, we provided those same responsibilities, but then we additionally added mayor support cells at the locations that our soldiers were lodging at. And then my 114th and 224th transportation companies provided additional manpower on the ground for Task Force Minneapolis that Colonel Tim Kemp was the task force commander in.
Very good, sir. We're talking to Colonel Stephen Burgraff, the commander of the 347th Regional Support Group on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, if I'm understanding you right, on state active duty, when we have soldiers and airmen called up, your people are called on from the 347th Regional Support Group to put them on active duty, to get them the gear they need, to get them to where they need to go, to handle the financial things, and then to have them stand down. And also, when we send our troops out on federal missions, such as going to the NTC or maybe the ECAB that just got home or some of those missions, do those missions require that some of your units attach themselves to them when they go overseas to try to perform their missions?
Not really. When we deploy here coming up in April of 2022, we'll deploy as our headquarters and we'll fall in under a different chain of command and conduct, you know, our wartime mission of, you know, providing that base support operations and RSOI and command and control and base defense. But like when the ECAP deploys, no, we do not send elements of the RSG with them.
Okay, so if it's a smaller deployment and they need some supplemental help, maybe finance or base command or some of those things, then occasionally you put some of your companies together to complete that mission. Is that correct or not?
Yep, when required, Tom.
All right, sir. You mentioned that you're going to be called up, or there's a combat support training exercise to be held in August at Fort McCoy. Now, is that for your entire command, the 347th Regional Support Group?
That is for the HAC of the 347th Regional Support Group, about 84 PACs. And this August, we'll go to Fort McCoy to conduct the CSTX, the Combat Support Training Exercise. And this is really our proof of concept, Tom, to test and validate our unit's ability to conduct our essential wartime tasks and to make sure that we're ready to deploy in April of 2022. And while we're there, we're really going to focus on one of our essential tasks, which is base defense. And that's really been one of our most challenging tasks to train on with everything going on with state active duty and with COVID-19, because that really challenged us to be able to train on that task. But that is the one task that we'll really focus on when we go to the CSTX here in August.
So that becomes something of a test to make sure that you're ready to go on the next mission.
That is correct.
Sir, we just got about a minute left. I understand that there's a logistics leader seminar in the new 34th Red Bull Infantry Division headquarters coming up.
Yes, so this year we'll be conducting our 8th annual logistics leader seminar. This is once a year where we get all the officers, warrant officers, and senior log NCOs together, and we discuss what's going on in the logistics community, changes that are coming down in the future, and then we hear from senior leaders, not just senior leaders in the Minnesota National Guard, but from the Army as well. This year's event included the 34th Infantry Division's alignment for training logisticians as well. So we had people throughout the country that are part of units that are aligned underneath the 34th Infantry Division participate as well. And our keynote speaker this year was Major General Lee Ellis, the Deputy Commander of the Army Materiel Command, and he gave a great talk to us. And then, of course, we heard from other senior leaders, the Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey, and the 34th Infantry Division Commander, Major General Mike Wickman. It's a great event that the logisticians can get together, exchange TTPs and practices, and really develop relationships that we need for future missions, such as the one that we just conducted here with Operation Safety Net.
Colonel, I think you've explained to me today that the 347th Regional Support Group kind of keeps the wheels moving and keeps everything on track and going, and sure appreciate your spending some time with us today to explain your command to our listeners.
It was absolutely my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. It was Colonel Stephen Burgraff, the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 347th Regional Support Group on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to get an update on the state's veteran cemeteries. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to get an update on the state of Minnesota's veteran cemeteries. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Are you or do you know a veteran at risk or experiencing homelessness? Are you a veteran having difficulty functioning in your daily life due to your health, a disability, or problems with substance abuse? Are these difficulties limiting your ability to work so much that it's impacting your life and your family? If so, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs can help you through a program called SOAR. SOAR is changing the lives of at-risk veterans and helping them to access sustainable income and stable housing by applying for federal funds available through the Social Security Administration. Social Security disability benefits can help cover housing costs, assist with needed health care, as well as helping make ends meet for veterans and their families. A SOAR representative will handle everything from preparing the paperwork to assisting with appeals, representing the veteran through the entire process, and all at no cost. For more information about the SOAR program or to refer someone, call 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. So our listeners know today we've got a guest co-host in the office, retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. And Doug, in this segment, we're going to meet Dave Swantek, who is the Deputy Director of Memorial Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and he's responsible for overseeing the administration and field operations of three state veteran cemeteries here in Minnesota. And Dave, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be back with you.
Dave, we've been talking to you on and off for a decade, and started out talking about Little Falls and Preston and Duluth. And I'm wondering, over the last year with the pandemic, how has that impacted those three state veteran cemeteries?
Well, it had a significant impact, you know, in terms of families being able to attend committal services to bury their loved ones at our cemeteries. And, you know, that's such an important part of you know, the aftermath of a death and the closure that comes along with that is, you know, for many families is being at the cemetery and participating in that service, honoring veterans. And so to limit that, you know, was very challenging for families. Fortunately, our cemeteries stayed open, so we continued to provide burials. The grounds of the cemeteries remained open, so families could still come out to the cemeteries to visit grave sites of their loved ones. But in terms of the services that were part of, you know, our current burials, that had to be scaled way back. And, you know, fortunately, we're back to a limited in-person situation now where we can have 50 people attending those committal services. So that's, you know, that was a good step forward. Of course, we're looking to get back to normal, as are all of us with our daily lives. But, you know, it was a good step forward to be able to open that back up to 50 guests. You know, again, we hope to be back to normal soon, but it definitely was an impact.
Dave, that's got to be a little better for those families. At least they get a chance to say goodbye and have a little closure, as opposed to having a loved one die in the hospital and not being able to go to the funeral. That had to be just terrible for some of those families.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and many of them, maybe if it was COVID-related, weren't even able to be at the bedside of their loved ones when they passed away. You know, it's just been a bad situation all around, but we'll hopefully get through it.
We're speaking with Dave Swantek, Deputy Director of Memorial Affairs for Minnesota State Veterans Cemeteries on Minnesota Military Radio. Dave, I want to go back and get a little history. I know that you were hired by the state of Minnesota in July 1996 to work on the State Veterans Cemetery up in Little Falls, and since then we've opened a couple more. Can you just tell our listeners there are federal cemeteries, and then you've now got three state cemeteries. And the reason that that I've gotten out of our discussions for the state cemeteries is so those cemeteries can be a little bit closer to the relatives of our veterans who have died. But can you run us through Little Falls and then the next two and tell us how that all happened? Because you were right there taking care of things.
Right, front center for all of this. Yeah, you're exactly right. State veteran cemeteries tend to be constructed in areas that don't really adequately serve the burial needs of our veterans across the nation. So in, you know, more sparsely populated areas of a variety of states, there are these state veteran cemeteries that get constructed, and they serve the needs, the burial needs of veterans in these more rural, you know, areas that aren't metropolitan, like the Twin Cities or Fort Snelling. We find that families tend to choose a burial, families and veterans tend to choose a burial option that's typically within 70 miles or closer to their home. And so, you know, that creates a problem for people that live in outstate Minnesota. So our cemetery in Little Falls, of course, centrally located, provides service to St. Cloud, Brainerd, Little Falls area. Preston kind of touches into the Rochester demographic down there. And then Duluth, of course, you know, that cemetery sits closest to a more major population center, you know, in comparison to our other locations with the high veteran population that we have up in Duluth.
So, Dave, the cemetery that you opened down in Preston, you told me it was a beautiful piece of land, and I have it in my mind that that should be called Arlington West because it's rolling hills, and you said it's beautiful. How's that looking these days?
Just fantastic. We every part of getting federal money for these projects is we have to go through what they call a compliance review. So every 3 years, officials or a team from the National Cemetery Administration comes out and they look at all kinds of things from the appearance of the cemetery. And it's kind of our field operations and in conjunction with the administrative function of those facilities. And we received a near perfect score on that compliance review. And Preston, we got 98% out of 100, and the 2% reduction was because we don't set headstones in the middle of winter, you know, and we might have 2 feet of snow on the ground, and there's frost in the ground down to 4 feet. It's kind of hard to set headstones, but they don't buy that argument. So we got penalized 2 percentage points. So I told my team in Preston, I said, in my mind, you can consider that to be a perfect score, 100%. So I was very proud of them for that, and I think, you know, only 3 or 4 years into our operation down there, to be able to score that high on one of those reviews speaks volumes about our staff.
Dave, when you were working on the Preston one, you told me that you had some real good local support, and when you finally opened it up, you had to move a couple of dignitaries in there that couldn't wait for it to be open before they left us. How'd that work?
Yeah. That's true. We buried 2 former mayors of Preston as our first burials there. And they, as you said, they knew about the cemetery. They were very supportive of what we were doing there. And they just unfortunately passed away before they were able to see it come to fruition. But we were honored to be able to provide that to their families, of that honor of being the first burial there.
And Dave, the newest one is up in Duluth, and it looked like an interesting piece of property once again. How is the local community up there taken to the State Veterans Cemetery in Duluth?
Very supportive up there. The staff that we've put in place up there has also been quite busy, and construction of that facility got delayed because of some consecutive really wet summers that occurred up there. And so the construction project got pushed out a little further than we would have liked, but we're in full swing up there now. And yeah, the veteran communities responded very well. And again, very appreciative to have such a you know, beautiful facility to honor their service.
Dave, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the newest state veteran cemetery that you're working on now in Redwood Falls. We're speaking with Dave Swantek, Deputy Director of Memorial Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Dave Swantek, the Deputy Director of Memorial Affairs for the Minnesota State Veterans Cemeteries. And also joining me in the office has been, in the studio, has been retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. And Doug, I think you had a question for Dave.
Yeah, absolutely, David. I mean, you've been obviously an integral part of bringing three of the cemeteries to life here. And I'm just wondering, even for a pro like you, there's got to be quite the process. It's a lot has to be put into bringing funding together, getting land. I'm just wondering if you might be able to describe a little bit of how that works and how you get some of that funding.
Yeah, absolutely. It is quite a process. You know, the first thing that we do early on is make sure that we are looking at locations that can support the demographics, the veteran population specifically can support us building a facility like this in the area, that we can serve the greatest number of veterans possible in a certain geographic location. And so Redwood Falls actually was a targeted location going back all the way to over a decade ago, around 2009. And so we garnered, you know, legislative support at that time, determined that the area would support a facility. And then the first thing we do is apply for federal funding through the National Cemetery Administration. They have a Veteran Cemetery Grants program that provides construction funding to states that are looking to build veteran cemeteries. And so we had done that over 10 years ago. And, you know, at the same time, we were proposing Preston and Duluth. And so, you know, with the limited resources of our agency, we were really only able to take one of those projects at a time. And finding the proper land for these to be built on is, you know, obviously a key piece. And we were able to obtain suitable property in the other locations first. And so that's really what pushed those projects out ahead of Redwood Falls. But, you know, here we are over 10 years later, and on the 1st of October, we received a funding opportunity notification from the National Cemetery Administration. And so we pulled this project off the shelf and full speed ahead with the design. And you're right, it's a tremendous effort that goes into this, but and the wait's been long for Redwood County. Redwood County commissioners actually voted to purchase the property that this cemetery is going to be built on and donated it to the state. And so they've got skin into the game, so to speak, and it's a great partnership, you know, that we develop between local, state, and federal governments. And, you know, this final fourth state veteran cemetery that our agency is going to own and operate is kind of the culmination of many, many years of planning and developing these projects.
Dave, it's been a career for you. What's your timing on getting Redwood Falls open?
We're almost finished with design. We're looking to bid the project out this summer and start construction, hopefully if all the pieces come together in the fall. And then plan to open the cemetery in the fall of 2023.
Well, I hope you're going to be able to come back and give us an update on how things are going there. But the next thing coming up is Memorial Day, and all of our listeners are usually interested on what kind of ceremonies are we going to be able to have this year after the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, fortunately, well, unfortunately, we're in the midst of this pandemic yet, but fortunately, last year, we really put our heads together to try to figure out how can we do something to honor our veterans, pay our respects to our veterans, and do it in a way that doesn't require crowds of people that we could not support at our facilities. And so last year, we partnered with TPT. And they produced a program that actually was an Emmy award-winning program that aired on Memorial Day last year, and virtually honored veterans. And it was a very well done piece. They've had interviews with some of our cemetery staff and veterans from some of our veterans' homes, and it was an outstanding program. And so we decided to do the same thing this year. So we are once again partnered up with TPT, and at 8 p.m. on May 31st, they will broadcast a program titled Reflections Memorial Day 2021. So that is how we will, you know, once again be doing virtual program to honor and pay our respects to our veterans.
Very good, Dave. I'd like to thank you for taking time to spend with us today, and I look forward to future reports on Redwood Falls. All the best to you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you again.
This is Dave Swantek, the Deputy Director of Memorial Affairs for the State of Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Greg Peterson, the President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Served in the United States Air Force for 23 years and is a member of the American Legion, the DAV, the VFW, and, of course, the Professional Loadmaster Association since he served in that capacity. Greg, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom. Thank you very much for having me back.
Greg, I had a call yesterday from a lady in Boyd, Minnesota, and she told me that she had two brothers that were served in World War II, and the guys were suffering. They had some medical problems, and they needed some help, and so she wanted to know. She was a loyal listener of the show, so I called her back and said, there's a county veteran service officer in Lacreparle County, and I gave her the name and the phone number, and she was pleased to get that information, and so that's part of what you guys do when there's some retired military out there and they need some help. That's where you step in.
Yeah, that's Josh Benega. He's our judge advocate for our association. Very good CVSO.
Well, he's going to have his hands full with Dolores Kiefer, who's going to call him and see if she can help with his brothers because they need some help, and that's all great that
well,
we got that done.
Good.
Now, I understand that you lost a county veteran service officer recently.
We did. Just on last Sunday, a Ramsey County, that's St. Paul is the home officer, William Nygaard, N-Y-G-A-A-R-D, passed away. We really don't know if he was ill. It was a surprise to us. But I wanted to let everybody know that Bill passed away, and his funeral is going to be this coming Tuesday on May 4th in Apple Valley and White Funeral Home. White Funeral Home on Pennock Avenue has the service. I intend to be there at least for the wake ahead of time. It's at 3 p.m. is the funeral. But, yeah, William Nygaard, he was married. He had worked for many years for the VA at the VA regional office. And then he had worked about 13 years, I think it is, down at the Ramsey County. We notified our service officers. A lot of them have relayed that they sure miss his wit, and he was a good joker, and he's a good service officer. We're all going to miss him.
Yes, sir, we'll miss him. All your county's veteran service officers do a great, great job. Now, Greg, I know we wanted to talk this week about some Minnesota housing assistance, some rent help. Can you tell us what's available
right
out there?
Well, this came out through MDBA, through Larry Herkey's branch. They sent us this information about how people who have been affected by COVID can get help in paying past due rent and utilities. So I'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, perfect. We'd sure love to hear about the program, and maybe you can let the listeners know what kind of qualifications are needed in order to apply for rent and exactly what it will help cover.
Okay. Well, obviously the person has to be renting in an agreement with a property owner. They have to have experienced a COVID-19 hardship that has either directly or indirectly impacted their ability to pay their rent. They have an income eligibility that goes by county, and it's quite high. I checked it here for Brown County, and it's like $45,000 for one person in the house and way up in the 60s for four people. And they have to be behind on their rent. So those are pretty much the qualifications.
And Greg, is this like just for veterans, just for service members, or who can actually apply for it?
No, this is actually a program for all of Minnesotans, and that's why I wanted to put it out there. Of course, veterans can take advantage of this, but anybody who's listening should let their friends and neighbors or relatives know. Anybody who is behind in their rent can get rent help from the Minnesota Housing Authority.
All right, so any Minnesotan can apply, and the best way to do that is to go to renthelpmn.org. Is that right?
Right, that website, or to call 211. Just like you'd pick up the phone and call 911, you can call 211, and the rent help people will come online there and get your information and help you apply. You can also apply for utilities, past due utilities, which includes electricity, gas, home energy services, water, sewer, and trash removal. The program does not cover phone or internet services.
And, of course, Greg, if they have the opportunity, they can go to that renthelpmn.org. Or if they can't remember all of that, just call their local county veteran service officer and they'll fix them up, right?
Exactly. We'll fix them up. We just got this information this week, and we're ready to go.
All right, Greg, we're just about out of time. I'd like to thank you for joining us once again on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, it's been great. Maybe we can get together in person sometime soon.
Hope we can do that. Thanks, Greg. That was Greg Peterson, president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. We have one message this week. The Minneapolis VA is returning to normal outpatient operations at our main facility and VA community clinics. We encourage you to contact your healthcare team so we can address your healthcare needs. You can visit your provider by phone, video, or in person. If you choose a face-to-face visit, you'll be required to wear a mask and maintain social distancing during your in-person appointment. To schedule an appointment, reach out to your provider or call 612-467-1100. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Stephen Burgraff from the 347th Regional Support Group, Dave Swantek from the State Veterans Cemeteries, Greg Peterson, the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we hear how a Minnesota mainstay company is helping to support many of the Yellow Ribbon organizations across the state. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.